This week on the Design Review, we talk about career moves again and what it's like moving up to a bigger company. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Design Review. My name is Chris and John isn't here this week. John's out sick, so I'm kind of on my own this week, but let's all send him our well wishes, and hopefully you get well soon, John. This week, it was actually his turn to put together the show notes, and since he's out, I kind of had to throw something together at the last minute, so my apologies if this one isn't your favorite episode. You know, maybe just go back and listen to one of the ones you actually like more. But today we're going to talk about some career stuff. I had the privilege to speak with someone about this exact topic a little while ago. They had set up a mentor session with me to talk about basically moving out of their startup and what they might expect when they join a bigger company. And I thought the things that we talked about were actually kind of interesting and helpful to share. So I thought, you know, why not just put together a show for this? And especially since John isn't here, you know, and I needed a topic kind of at the last minute. So I threw this together, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So for a little bit of context, just so you know, I have worked in startups, I have worked in small companies, I have worked in mid-sized companies, and I've worked in giant mega corporations. And what I'm going to share with you today is obviously, you know, based purely on my own experiences. But I just wanted to, you know, sort of clarify that before we really dig in. You know, other people might have other kinds of experiences that they can share. But yeah, that's basically, what I'm going to be talking about. So let's begin. So the very first thing really is, you know, making the decision to move on from something, right? And it's always risky to leave whatever it is that you're doing in order to take on like a new role or a new job. But it happens to everybody, right? Everybody sort of feels that way. We all kind of grow out of whatever we did before and feel the urge to seek experiences that present new challenges or challenge us in ways that we haven't been challenged before. You know, it's very normal actually to feel that way. And it means that you're growing, you know, which is a good thing. I think it's actually kind of dangerous to not feel that way, every now and again. But the question is, what do you do when you start feeling that way, right? When you start feeling that urge to like, oh, this situation I'm in is not quite right. Well, it may actually surprise you to hear that I am actually 100% an advocate of staying in your role and trying to work with your existing coworkers and manager to basically create the situation that you want first, right? It's always better to create the job that you want rather than, you know, just searching for some sense of ideal job, right? Because quite frankly, an ideal job doesn't exist, right? There's no ideal job. Every job has problems and flaws and trade-offs. But sometimes you reach sort of the limit of what your specific situation can offer you, right? You'll never know for sure unless you try talking about this stuff with your manager. But when you hit that limit, you know, it's probably a good time to start thinking about moving on. But yeah, definitely try to work with your existing company first. Make sure that, you know, you're communicating this stuff with your manager, right? Now, I don't know what precise criteria to talk about here. It's often a personal thing that triggers this urge, but it's usually things like, you know, first of all, compensation, right? And this is like, if you are consistently doing more than what you're being paid to do, right? Or if you are paid less than your peers at the same job level, right? And this, we know this is a fact, especially for women in this industry, because women are dramatically underpaid, for their level of contribution. So that right off the bat, you know, is like, should be a thing you should be talking about, you know, with your manager. Another thing would be responsibilities. So like, if your tasks have not changed very much after many, many years of working in a particular role, or if your tasks have changed very quickly beyond what you feel is your actual job, you know, these are things to talk about. And of course, time, like how much time you're putting in, and, you know, are you consistently having to put in more time than what you're willing to commit to, right? Like if you're working consistently, you know, 80 hours a week, you know, that's a real problem. Or in the converse, you know, if you finish everything quickly and you start to get bored because you basically have nothing else to do all the time, you know, these are all things that you should be discussing with your manager, right? And these are also things that could be triggering you to feel like, hey, this is not the right role for me. But yeah, I mean, they're like I said, you need to talk about these things with your manager because they're absolutely things that you can fix. And there's no reason to change jobs just because, you know, this is the situation that you're in. But you have to be willing, you know, to have those conversations and, you know, talk to your manager about this stuff and talk about what you want. Now, let's assume that, you know, you've talked to them and you've had these conversations and you tried working with the organization and you've done everything you can in, within your power to try and, you know, make a better situation for yourself and, you know, nothing's changed. Well, at that point, it's probably time to move on. So now what? Okay, so the first thing that I tell everyone is to put some time into considering what you want to do. I mean, yes, obviously you want to get out of your current situation. But you need to sort of think beyond just changing your situation, right? And what is it that you actually want? What is it that you actually want to be doing? And I say this is the first thing to do because really this is the first step in your job search too. If you know what you want to do, you'll be far more effective in finding the right companies to work for. You know, far too often when I talk to, when I mentor people, you know, the thing that they're focused on really is just getting a job, right? And, you know, they come out of school or they come out of a boot camp and, they're just like, well, I need to get a job. Like, how do I get a job? And it's like, well, what is it that you actually want to be doing? Have you thought about that at all yet? Right. And surprisingly, a lot of people haven't. And that's not a bad thing. You know, it's like, it's not wrong to not think about it, but it's important to consider what you want to do so that you can actually have a chance at, you know, finding the right companies for yourself, right? Now, one big caveat with big companies is that they have their finger in so many different pies that even if you get hired at, say, Google or something to work on a particular team, you might not actually be working on that with that team or working on that project forever. You know, you often have the chance to move around, right? And in smaller companies, you may not get that luxury, right? A smaller sized organization, they sort of have to focus just out of necessity, right? They don't have time to, like, you know, spread their product offerings out over like a large sort of area, right? Like if you're a, let's say you're a company that makes mobile games, well, chances are you're not going to be able, like a small company, right, that makes mobile games, chances are you're not going to really be able to, like, get into, like, PC gaming hardware as well, right? So, you know, small companies, they sort of have to focus. And so to join a small company or a startup means that you'll be sort of more or less working on just that one product for the next, you know, X number of years. And the same might be true in a bigger org, but, you know, you also have the ability to sort of move around a bit and work on a lot of different things and do different stuff, for a bigger company. And so this is where knowing what you want to do comes into play, right? Because if you don't know what you want, navigating around a bigger company will be really difficult, basically, right? And so, you know, it's important, you know, think about what you want and what you want to be doing. And then look for the companies that are well known for those things and then apply, and that's it, right? So what happens next, right? What are some of the things you can expect when you work at a bigger company? So one of the first things right away is involving your work experience, right? And this is just something to keep in mind, that when you're seeking a position at a large organization, your work experience and job level that you have currently may not transfer exactly in the way that you want it to, right? So for example, like you might be a senior or a lead designer in a startup, but at a much larger company, you might have to start at a lower level. Now, why is that? Well, to put it simply, there are often really simplistic equations that they use in HR departments to set levels in big orgs. And so based on your education and years of experience, et cetera, they calculate what level to set you at if and when you get hired. Now, additionally, big companies tend to attract the most talent, right? Meaning like folks with PhDs and stuff, or like really high levels of education and training, they tend to gain employment at larger organizations, right? Because the companies are doing those things. You know, personally, I remember working alongside some PhDs who were actually at the same level as me at senior level. And I don't have a PhD personally, but it was certainly interesting for me to get to work alongside people who had these really, really advanced degrees. But anyway, the point is that larger orgs can attract a large pool of applicants, and they get to pick and choose from the best of everybody. And so then they set the job levels however they feel is necessary for them, right? And even if you individually, you know, maybe you've reached a fairly high level at your smaller company, the new company you're applying to, they might bring you in at a much lower level than maybe you'd prefer. So, you know, it's just something to think about when you're joining a larger organization. Now, the thing to keep in mind, though, is that if you really want to work on certain topics or work with certain people, like let's say you know who the PhD is that works there, you know, coming in at a lower level isn't necessarily the end of the world, right? When I joined Mercedes R&D, I actually started at a very low level. I was like a basic level designer, which... you know, I actually hadn't worked at that level in a long time. And it, to be honest, it did feel a little weird because I, you know, I hadn't been at that level in a while and my salary was certainly lower than what I wanted. And I feel like, you know, in general, they didn't really respect a lot of the accomplishments that I did make. But because I was able to show my expertise and show like what I was capable of doing, I got promoted like within like 6 months. And got a higher level role like almost immediately. And it was like really unheard of, I think, to get promoted that quickly. but, you know, like basically a lot of it really depended on my manager and having a good working relationship with them. So regardless of what level you come in at, the most important thing for you to do is to sort of establish that relationship, right? Make sure you build a good working relationship with your manager so that you can get promoted, basically, right? So work experience. The other thing that I want to talk about is around processes and tools. So there's this kind of big idea that big companies, they use like the best processes and best methods and they have the best tools because, you know, they have the most money to spend on all of that stuff. And in my experience, it's sort of hit and miss, and it really kind of depends. And the thing to keep in mind with regards to this is that the decision that the company makes around processes and tools, especially if it's a really large organization, it really can impact a lot of different people and a lot of different teams, you know, all over the place, right? And so deciding what stuff to use really has to scale well to however many people are in the company and all the different, you know, components, right? Because, you know, as an organization, they don't want to buy, you know, the same basic software like three or four different times, you know, of different types, depending on what it is, right? Like they want to buy like, you know, a 10,000 seat license for, you know, whatever application it is, right? And so in some situations, this works really well, right? But in other situations, it can be really horrible. and it can be really frustrating at times because, you know, especially if you need a certain application or if you need to do things in a certain way that's, you know, different than the sort of processes and methods that are sort of approved by the organization, you know, sometimes those company policies can really get in the way. And especially for us as designers, you know, sometimes our preferred products really aren't compatible with what the rest of the company is using, which is sort of that old, you know, Mac versus Windows debate, right? I remember at Mercedes, for example, we tried for a long time to get Sketch. This was sort of the pre-Figma. And we pushed, you know, really hard to get Sketch approved by the IT like management and talked about why we needed it, et cetera, et cetera. It took forever, you know, to get it approved. And, you know, what we did in the meantime was just sort of buy our own like team license and stuff. And we had to get approval to like install this stuff, do a minimal like data security check and all this stuff. It eventually passed through the groups, you know, because it was for Mercedes. So it passed through the groups in Germany as well. And eventually they started like, you know, working with IT over there to get it approved. And eventually, finally, after like, I don't know how many years, we got some like, general group approval to like get IT managed, software licenses and stuff. And so it finally got added to the setup and tooling for design groups. So, it was a lot of work. I remember having many meetings about it and like talking about this with IT, a bunch of times. And, we finally got it. Anyways, I digress. But yeah, so talking about sort of Mac versus Windows. So yeah, in a lot of small companies, especially here in the Bay Area, you know, you can more or less expect to see Apple products here, right? And, you know, in my opinion, despite, you know, some of the things that I dislike about the way Mac OS does stuff, you know, I think in general, it's still better to use Apple products than Windows products for the same functions, you know. But if you work in a big organization, and especially if they have offices all over the world, you know, you'll very likely encounter, you know, people working with Windows, you know, and, you know, Outlook and Word and PowerPoint and all that stuff, even if the design team gets to use all the cool Apple stuff. And that's when you have to deal with all this like cross compatibility. Now, you know, the good thing is, for the most part, a lot of stuff is more or less compatible across the different platforms, right? You send somebody an email, they can read it. Files in general are mostly okay. But, you know, not always, right? Like PowerPoint doesn't open Keynote files, but, you know, Keynote can open PowerPoint, right? Things like that. And so it's in those types of particular ways, like with certain file types and things like that, where it might be very incompatible. Right. And, you know, you just have to learn, you know, who's got what machines at the company and just figure out how to like work around it. Right. It's annoying as heck, but yeah, it's just a reality. There's also, of course, cloud-based tools, you know, like Gmail or Figma and things like that, that can fix a lot of this cross-compatibility stuff, but not every company uses that stuff, right? And a lot of the time, you know, the tools that a company has approved, they came from some decision that was made, you know, like 20 or 30 years ago by some VP that, who knows, they may not even work there anymore, But to renegotiate the deal that they made would be more trouble than it's actually worth. So they just don't bother changing it, you know? And, you know, sometimes it's just like that, you know, like I mentioned with Sketch, like it took forever to get Sketch done. It was like a multi-year project. But the point is sometimes the processes and tools at big companies can be super annoying. Sometimes it's actually really great too. It just depends on what it is. So yeah, that's processes and tools. Then, you know, especially if you think about like, you know, if you're coming from like a smaller organization that, you know, maybe is like earlier in its growth, you know, you might look to a bigger company and say, hey, you know, they know what they're doing. They know how to do things. And that's where this whole idea like, oh, okay, the big companies like know how to like run stuff, and they might know certain things, and that's true. But not with everything, you know. Sometimes they're also less efficient, you know. It just depends on what it is. Which leads me to the next thing, which is around pacing. And this is another one. Like one of the big things that people talk about around big companies is that they're also very, very slow, and that the pacing of things can feel, you know, very stilted and slow moving. In my experience, I don't think it's so much that it's slow, but there's like a lot more things that you deal with on a daily basis than in a smaller company. Like, for example, in a smaller company, you have the benefit of focus, meaning that, you know, even though you might have a lot of things to do, like you wear many hats and you do a lot of different things, they're more or less towards one project or one product, or like, you know, a couple different things at the most, right? Like you're really not, you know, diversified that much, right? It's the point I made earlier about focus, right? You're not really working on, you know, mobile games and then also PC gaming hardware, right? Like it's not like that. But in big companies, I found that my time was really spread out over a lot of different things, and each with, you know, their own set of different things to do. You know, like some projects I was in the sort of like approval seeking phase, and other projects I was in various different stages of design, and then having to context switch between a lot of these different projects and where they were. I think the other thing that tends to slow bigger organizations down is the sort of levels of decision making, right? Big companies tend to be very hierarchical, and you sometimes have to spend your time floating things up through the hierarchy in order to get the approval you need to move on to the next stage. And that can just take a lot of time. You know, which, you know, this involves a lot of meetings, right? I often, you know, found myself sometimes in like 4 to 6 hours of meetings a day, you know. And this was either to get information from people I needed to get information from, or to review and share information with other people that I needed to share things with. And so, you know, in a bigger company, you just have that, you know, the setup where there's just a lot more social interaction that you have to deal with in a bigger company, because there's just lots more people. And you know, like sometimes those meetings are really important, right? Like, especially if you're trying to get approval for things and like review stuff with, executives and stuff like that. But sometimes those meetings really could just be an email chain, or, you know, some Slack messages or something like that. For me, I remember it was kind of difficult to adjust to the amount of meetings and conversations that I was expected to have about different things. Because, you know, I remember working in smaller companies and just sort of like, okay, well, I need to do XYZ thing, so I'm just going to go do it, right? And, you know, that mentality, it works actually really good in smaller companies, because it's like, hey, you're just getting stuff done. But sometimes that can actually get people in trouble in bigger organizations, because, you know, there's those approval chains and things you have to sort of deal with. And also note that I said, you know, that people sort of expected me to have these conversations, right? You know, it was something that was sort of expected, but not necessarily communicated, right? And, you know, That's just sort of a fact of life in big companies that people sometimes will have these sort of like implied expectations on you. And you just sort of have to learn, you know, the way in which they communicate these types of things. You know, it took me a little bit to sort of pick up on it, but I eventually got it. And yeah, sometimes it's very clear where they say, you know, okay, speak to so and so. But sometimes it's not always clear, and it's just sort of implied, like, hey, go do this, right? Or that's an explicit one. But yeah, you'll just figure it out, right? Like as you gain experience, it's one of those things you just sort of learn over time. Now the side issue to this is around communication and documentation, right? And for sure, if you are coming from a smaller company, joining a bigger organization means that, you know, you're just gonna have to up your game when it comes to communication. In smaller companies, I remember, you know, sometimes you can get away with not always communicating things or not always documenting things. And you just can't really do that in big companies. And the reason is because there's just so many more moving pieces and so many people involved in things that if you're not really communicating, it can have a really lot of detrimental, like latent downstream effects on other groups. And, you know, this is why knowledge sharing is so powerful in big organizations, and people do manipulate the flow of information in big companies, right? My personal attitude was just to share what I know with whomever I knew needed to know about the stuff, right? Like, so usually it was just like if I was working with another team on a particular project, I made sure that I would share everything that I knew about it, right? Because I just wanted everyone to be on the same page and know what I know, so that we could put more of our energy on just trying to do the right thing rather than, like, you know, spending our time trying to like dig out information from the company. But I know of other situations, not me, where people had to constantly ask for updates from project leads, not me. And the thing about that people don't realize is like, well, yeah, sure, maybe you yourself are showing how valuable you are because you're being the decision maker or whatever. Not only does that make things more difficult for everyone you work with, but it also affects the trust that they have with you, right? And I know in that some of those situations, people actually started to get a little suspicious. And once that suspicion starts, it actually does quite a lot more harm than you think it does. And, you know, like some people have the attitude where it's like, hey, you know, like, you know, I'm a tough guy. I can take criticism, whatever. Like, I know it sounds really cool to be that way, but once you break trust with people in a company, like that's about it. Like, there's not much more you can do. So it's better, in my opinion, to just share what you know and get that out of the way, right? So, but you know, like I said, people do manipulate the flow of information, and you know, you can advance up the chain by doing that. So, you know, it happens. Documentation is another important skill that you should develop. Now, I know what you're gonna say. We're agile, so we don't need documentation. Cool, but that's wrong. Even in agile, you actually need to document things. Maybe not as, you know, to the extent as like in a bigger company, but you definitely need to document things even in a small organization. And the reason for doing any kind of documentation is because you basically just can't be present in all the meetings and conversations where your project is being referenced, right? Especially in big companies. And for those situations, the documentation that you have, is what people will be looking at, you know, the presentations you've made as well, right? So if you've given presentations on it, you know, if you share that with people, that's what they're going to look at later, right? Documentation was actually something I had to get used to doing. Coming from smaller orgs, I didn't do as much in terms of documentation in the beginning that I eventually, you know, eventually I did a ton. But in the beginning, I didn't really do that much. Because I remember, you know, back in the day, I could just sort of get away with having conversations with people rather than, you know, trying to document everything first and then talk to them, right? But like I said, like, you simply just can't be present for every single meeting and every single discussion where your project is being referenced. And so the documentation you have is your stand-in. And I got so good at documentation to the point where people were giving me compliments on it. And it was because, you know, the things that I wrote were really helpful and answered all the key questions that they had. The secret, actually, I'll give you my secret. The secret to my documentation was just simply asking myself, if I had to use this to build this thing, what would I need to know? Right. And it really helped me think about what I was writing, to look at it from that perspective. And yeah, like, as long as I felt confident about the answer that I was giving people, then I felt like, well, you know, this is good enough to send around. And so yeah, in total, you know, despite how frustrating, you know, meetings can be sometimes, meetings and all that stuff, they're actually really good opportunities for you to develop good communication skills. And so, it's important, especially if you're sort of starting at a lower level and trying to advance, practicing your communication is really, really important. And it helps you, advance in your career. The next thing I want to talk about is budgets. So this is another major difference, in big companies versus small companies, which is that the bigger companies just often have bigger budgets allocated to various projects, right? And again, like, when I was starting at Mercedes, for example, I was used to actually being very, very conservative with the things that I requested for projects, because I was coming from a smaller organization where we didn't have as many resources to sort of just throw into projects. And so I had to be very careful about what I was requesting and where I would spend project budget. You know, a lot of the time it was for research. But, you know, if I was too ambitious, I sort of knew the answer that I would get. So I sort of stopped asking for certain stuff. But in bigger companies, you can usually ask for a lot of stuff, you know, like either like new hardware or different software. And especially if you can show how it relates to the project that you're working on, you know, it's a good thing, you know. But that's also sort of the hitch, right? Like, you have to be able to show how your request, you know, is going to relate to the project that you're working on. So, you know, like for example, at MBRDNA, you know, I'd often get approval for various different like sensors and hardware and different things because, I was just showing, hey, like, you know, I think this would be useful for this project that we're working on. And, you know, it'd be nice to, develop some prototypes for using this thing. And in general, we sort of had a general like blanket request to sort of look for new tech and stuff like that. And our team even had a Slack channel dedicated to like sharing links and things of like, you know, like, I remember we would like, I would look through Kickstarter, for example, and look at like some of the hardware and stuff that people were developing in there. And, you know, like stuff that I would share in there. I remember like our manager would even ask, or not just me, but like literally anybody, like, people would post links and then, you know, our manager would be in there looking through it. And then he'd be like, you know, how many should we get? You know, stuff like that. And so the reason why this happens, right? And it's sort of like the pacing thing, is that basically big companies, they serve a much bigger set of customers, right? And so, you know, sort of like with the projects at Mercedes, the reason why I had to go through so much stuff with them and why I had so much budget for my projects was because I had to make sure that all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed, because any minor error could actually have a big impact on the outcome of the project. And so this is a huge difference as compared to startups, where, you know, a lot of like being effective in a startup is what you actually leave out, because you just won't have time to do everything to the degree of completion that a big company can afford to do. And so sometimes you even have to omit some really big things in order to get something out quicker. And you can sort of get away with not being as complete as you can in a big company. And so, spending more budget on projects is just sort of part of, you know, the thing at big companies, right? Because you just basically have to ensure that everything hits a certain standard for the most part. And that's why they spend. So that's kind of, I don't know, that's kind of all I had for today. I know it's a little bit shorter episode than some of our recent episodes. I know there's probably a lot more stuff that I could get into than what I actually covered today. I know it's fairly high level, but I just wanted to give kind of an overview of stuff to think about if you're considering making a career change like this. And, you know, like working for big companies, just like with small companies, you know, there are benefits to being at a big company and there are trade-offs to being at a big company. And especially here in the Bay Area, I think, especially like in particular this area, because there are so many startups and the prevalence of startup culture, you know, I think working at big companies sort of got a bad rep from, I don't know, just all the stuff that's out there about startups. And yeah, it's nice to work in a startup because there's a lot more, there's a lot more that you can learn. There's a lot more that you can gain from being in a smaller organization. But there's also things that you won't get, you know, unless you work in a giant mega corporation too, you know? And so it's something worth considering if you are interested in changing jobs. And if you're like I talked about in the beginning, like if you've gone through the effort of talking about, you know, what sorts of things you want out of your current situation, you know, if you can't somehow make it happen at your current job and you're looking to move on, you know, considering working at a bigger company is actually, you know, something you might do, because there's a lot of valuable things you can gain from that as well. So yeah, I hope this has been helpful. As always, if you have any particular questions about this topic in general, I'd be happy to answer more specific questions. Or, you know, if you have other questions at all that you would like, you know, to have a podcast episode dedicated to it for you, you can send us those questions by going to designreviewpodcast.com. There's a way to send us email there. You can also go to anchor.fm/designreview and leave us a message. That's another good way. Or you can also just message us directly on Twitter. The show is dr_podcast. Jonathan is design UX UI, and I am machine human. So we're usually on there, you know, throughout the day, depending on what's going on. And that's a good way to, like, you know, contact us. You can also sponsor the show. That would be really great, because it just helps us keep the show going, basically. Any money you donate to us, we definitely put it right back into the show. You know, it's not, you know, there's no like secret design review trust fund. Believe me. And so, yeah, if you want to sponsor the show, just go to anchor.fm/designreview. There's a button there that will allow you to select a dollar amount that you want to pledge every month. And like I said, it really just goes into helping us keep the show going. Please also leave us a review on iTunes or wherever else you are listening to this podcast, because it really does help us reach more people. The more positive reviews we get and ratings, the more likely it is that, you know, our show shows up in search algorithms. And so if you really like this show, really would appreciate giving us a nice review and rating. Lastly, of course, if you want a more personal one-on-one interaction about this specific topic or any other topic that you are concerned about as a designer or whatever, you can always find a mentor by going to officehoursproject.com. This is something that I put together at the very beginning of our sort of COVID pandemic existence. There's just a lot of great people on there who are available and willing to talk to you and give you some advice on whatever you need. And so, yeah, that's about it. I hope this was helpful. I hope you enjoyed it. I apologize for the brevity, but, you know, this was the best I could do and on very short notice. Thanks again for listening. John hopefully will be back for the next episode. Like I said, if you have any other questions, feel free to contact us, and we'll see you next time. Have a good one. Bye.